Britain and America. Divisions over slavery. Lord Palmerston. Uncle Tom's Cabin and the Stafford House Address. Charles Dickens's Disappointment. The Caning of Charles Sumner. For 75 years after the War of Independence, the British approach to dealing with the Americans had boiled down to one simple tactic: to be very civil, very firm, and to go our own way. During the late 1850s, the prevailing view in London was that Washington could not be trusted.
"These Yankees are most disagreeable fellows to have to do anything about any American question,"
the Prime Minister, Lord Palmerston, had complained in 1857 to Lord Clarendon, his Foreign Secretary, 14 months before Lord Lyons's arrival in America.
"They are on the spot, strong, totally unscrupulous and dishonest, and determined somehow or other to carry their point."
It went without saying that the Foreign Office expected Lyons to be on guard against any American chicanery. One of the legacies of the War of 1812 was a British fear that the United States might try to annex British North America, as Canada was then known, accompanied by a conviction among Americans that they should never stop trying. It was neither forgiven nor forgotten in England that precious ships and men had to be diverted from the desperate war against Napoleon Bonaparte in order to defend Canada from three invasion attempts by the United States between 1812 and 1814. London regarded the burning of Washington and the White House by British soldiers in August 1814 as a well-deserved retribution for the sacking of York, later called Toronto, by American troops. Lyons soon discovered, as had each of his predecessors, that the War of 1812 had not only an entirely different meaning in the United States, but also a different outcome. In American histories, Britain had provoked the war by her arrogant and unreasonable behavior. First, by blockading all ports under Napoleonic rule, thereby stifling American trade, and second, by boarding American ships in search of deserters from the Royal Navy. The practice of impressing American sailors into the Navy was considered beyond the pale, especially when it took place off the coast of Virginia. The term impressment meant the legal conscription of a civilian, usually a sailor, into the Royal Navy. The practice had been going on since the 1600s. It was rare for landlubbers to be impressed, but in time of war, all kinds of injustices took place, which for the most part the authorities pretended not to notice. Despite furious protests from Washington, the number of American citizens wrongly impressed had steadily increased over the years, and by 1812 the tally had reached over 6,000. But when the U.S. Congress declared war on June 8, 1812, it was to stop a practice that had already been disavowed by the English. Just 2 days earlier, in London, the British government had agreed to stop impressment, too late to affect the outcome of the debates in Washington. The peace treaty signed by Britain and America in 1814, the Treaty of Ghent, was based on the assumption that the war had been a draw, since no territory was lost or gained by either side. However, news of the treaty had not yet reached the British and American armies facing each other in New Orleans, and a battle still took place on January 26th. Though a small engagement compared to the great battles unfolding in Europe, it was a decisive American victory. General Andrew Jackson's force of 4,000 men managed to defeat a British expedition almost three times its size. The fact that this stunning victory occurred after peace had been declared was later brushed aside in the telling. Two great American myths were born: that Andrew Jackson won the war, and that he had not only put the British in their place, but also crushed the army that had defeated Napoleon. The failure of the United States to conquer Canada during the war had come as a great surprise to many Americans. Former President Thomas Jefferson wrote to a colleague in August 1812, "The acquisition of Canada this year, as far as the neighborhood of Quebec, will be a mere matter of marching, and will give us experience for the attack of Halifax the next, and the final expulsion of England from the American continent." Over the next few decades, politicians often expressed their desire to expel England from the American continent.
When small local rebellions broke out in Quebec and Toronto in 1837, it came as no surprise to the British to learn that President Martin Van Buren had ostentatiously invoked international law and declared U.S. neutrality, or that American sympathizers were providing arms and volunteers to the rebels. By announcing neutrality, Van Buren elevated the uprising of a few hundred Canadians to the standard applied to an international war, giving hope to Americans who believed that a Canada free from British shackles would want to join the Union.